Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And today's guest is a man who turned a simple blog into a multi-million dollar content, software, and education company. And I want to find out in this interview how he did it. In 2006, Brian Clark launched Copyblogger, a site that taught bloggers how to write more compelling content. When I started blogging, I remember that I immediately went to Copyblogger because I needed to learn how to write headlines, how to be more useful, just understand the whole process. And I thought that the way that Brian and his company handled that education was just, it gave me something to aspire to, as opposed to so many others at the time who were just teaching people how to make money quickly by scamming through or shoving as many affiliate programs in their site as possible. I just love the quality of content on Copyblogger. Over the years since then, Copyblogger started creating software and services for content creators, including Synthesis, where they offer WordPress hosting, StudioPress for web design, and Scribe for content marketing. And they also continue to do training. Brian, welcome, and thanks for sharing your story.
Oh, thank you for having me, Andrew.
Hey, you know, I want to focus more about the transition from content to the other businesses, but something stood out when I researched you. You started your business with $1,000, and a large part of that went to design. If you focus so much on content, on copy, why was design so important to you from the beginning?
Well, like it or not, we always think that we'll be judged by the content of our character or just our content. But first impressions matter. And I've been fortunate to have been around some very talented designers since day one who taught me the things I didn't know about that. But, you know, just from a basic, my background's in psychology, so I knew psychology of color and design were important. And frankly, at that time, design was not emphasized much on blogs in particular, and certainly not a lot of the cutting edge stuff we see actually coming out of the WordPress space, which is a big change from the early days, which makes sense. But so that was just another way for an unknown, completely unknown person to stand out. Obviously, I wanted to build an audience based on what I had to say. But that immediate perception when you arrive at a site, that was important to me. So design was something that I invested in early. And then basically, other than just keeping the site up with hosting, that's all I spent before we were profitable.
No soft business. Just con. I remember a few years ago, and you said you $1 million in sales, which blew so many people's minds. Why did you stick with that, with the content, with the education? Why did you decide to move on to other things?
It's interesting. That's a great question. Because even now, I'd say that education, based on last year's 2013's revenue, is about only 1/10 of our revenue. And yet, as you might imagine, it has some of the highest margins because of the way it's produced and all that. But there was this theory I had when I started Copyblogger that the audience would tell me what they needed, because I really had no clue of what that would be at the beginning. I was just going to listen. And the frustrations and the problems often centered around the free platform that we were all operating off of, which was WordPress in the first place. Nothing against WordPress whatsoever. You know, as open source core software, it's amazing. That's why it's so popular, the most popular CMS on the internet. But it just, you know, there were things about it that were hard for what I call normal people, which I'm somewhere in the middle of, not highly technically proficient, but probably more than the average person, obviously. And that's really how we got into software, which was, it was just too difficult to do the kind of things that we wanted to do with WordPress in particular.
For example, what was one screaming need that people in the audience early on came to you with?
Well, just being able to do basic tweaks, whether they be design or layout or just standard stuff in the appearance of your site, required code. And even in a cut and paste situation, that makes a lot of people nervous. And that was really the beginning of the idea behind the WordPress design framework, where a lot of that stuff where you did have to dig into the code, for example, just to present an alternate title tag so that Google sees one thing and people see something much nicer for people. In the old days, that mattered. Not so much anymore after Hummingbird. But to do that, you had to go into the code. And it's just a pain. And it's something that normal people don't feel comfortable with. And we're talking about essentially writers and content creators, not technicians. So there was this struggle between those who created much easier content publishing software and those who still had to use it.
Okay. So looking at an early version of your site, actually, I asked my team to get me screenshots of your site for every year since launch. 2007, right on the margin of your site is a link to Mindphase, which is your recommended hosting. It was an ad for Mindphase.
Right.
So you started out recommending software that and hosting that already existed. Why not continue? Why not say, well, if people have this issue where they can't design their site or they can't change the heading, I will look for the best software out there and I will do an affiliate program with them and promote that. Why did you decide to start creating on your own?
Well, you have to understand it was a very nascent space, so it didn't exist. You point out hosting with Mindphase. There were some good people there. That was a startup that grew very fast and then got acquired. That's the hosting story. And they were very good to us and tried their hardest, but it was always a nightmare with hosting. And hosting is the hardest problem to solve. No knock against anyone in that business. So we never really wanted to be in the hosting business necessarily. We had our own reasons for needing to develop hosting, which will be a big discussion for this year from us. But effectively, Synthesis came because we needed our own hosting. So we did it ourselves, and then we started selling it. I mean, that's the story of the company. If we need it, or I need it as a content publisher who's not a technical whiz, then there's a market need for it. And it just served us well the entire time.
You know, speaking of advertising, reminds me, I forgot to say thank you to my sponsor, Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer, he is the man to talk to, especially if you're a tech startup. Just go to walkercorporatelaw.com. So, Brian, they were coming to you and saying, we don't know how to adjust the code. We don't know how to deal with the design of it. What's the first they came to you with that you said, I'm going to try addressing that with not an educational product, but with software?
Well, that really dates back to, like I said, the first WordPress design framework, and that was Thesis at the time. It was a perfect home run of having an existing audience and a piece of technology that solved problems. And that really just took off. The interesting thing about software to me was that in 2005, before I started Copyblogger, I was a 37 Signals fanboy. And I was just so in awe of the fact that a design group could go into software. And literally remember the thought, too bad I could never do that. But this is what I keep trying to explain to people, that is when you have an audience and they have a need, the resources to get it done are going to come to you. I still can't code to this day, but I have some of the best coders around, you know, and that was all kind of made possible by the momentum that we established by first doing the first training product. You know, that was something that was based on years of experience and something that Tony Clark, no relation, but our COO now, we were able to create, which...
What was that first one?
That was our online education program. Back in 2007, it's so interesting because now online education is getting funded left and right, the future of everything, you know, rah, rah, rah. But in 2007, we literally had to say, no, look, trust me, people will pay for content. Stop putting AdSense on your site and do something that will actually work. And that was, you know, the launch of Teaching Sells. And we went from zero to 100,000 in 2 days, and then zero to seven figures by, you know, that period a year later. So that was the beginning. And I think, you know, to this day, the premise of that program is this is, if you can create free content, you can create premium content that people will pay for. And that's the way you get into business. It's a lot more doable, even though it is hard work, than it is to get into software. You can trust me on that one.
I've seen it for myself. Thesis had already existed at the time, right? Chris Pearson put it together?
Well, Chris and I were business partners. He was my first designer. He was the guy I paid that $1,000 to, and he'll still complain to this day that I ripped him off. But I was like,
why?
Come on. You know, he's like, that was a steal for that $1,000 design. I'm like, I know, but so... And then Chris and I built another site while I was running CopyBlogger. He was my designer, so when I needed things done, he handled that. But it was all my writing and whatnot. We created another site. Now remember, this was 2006. YouTube was just coming on, had not been acquired by Google yet. So I'm thinking, online video, that's the thing. YouTube, someone's going to buy YouTube. This is the huge thing, okay? So we started a video tutorial site, and we both contributed content to that, and that sold in the six figures 6 months later, riding that kind of YouTube acquisition mania after Google paid so much money for it. So for Chris, that was a lot of money, and he went and disappeared and had fun, and for me... since I hadn't launched anything for sale yet on CopyBlogger, that basically bankrolled, you know, 2007 until Tony and I did launch Teaching Sales. So even then, the audience facilitated the revenue because we launched a site that we were able to sell a short time later. So Chris gets tired of living the great life that he was living for about 6 months there. And he said, you know what? People need to pay for themes. You know, they need support. This free theme thing, which was the norm at that time, it's not supportable. And he was right. So he went off to start building. And then this concept of the framework, as opposed to just the pretty picture, the functional aspect behind the scenes, kind of came to life. And so he launched it, and he was... I think he was doing fairly well with it, and I thought it was great. You know, I'm like, you know, that's probably a good $120,000 a year business, you know, and that's a lot better than giving away free themes for link backs, right? And then Chris comes to me and he goes, this guy, Brian Gardner, is making $30,000 a month selling themes. At the time, it was Revolution before StudioPress. And then he got my attention. So I said, okay. And he said, look, all I want to do is code. I want to build. I don't want to market. I don't want to sell. I don't want to do anything. Do you want a partner? So that's what happened. We formed DIY Themes, the official company that was both of ours. And we launched it. And then I guess less than a year later, we'd gone from 10 grand a month to 10 grand a day. It was the right product at the right time because nothing else existed like it and people needed it. And most of all, it was something that I think at the time a lot of people didn't catch, which was we're serving the business community, not the WordPress community. Now, Chris was very hostile to the WordPress community, which I was not down with and I thought was a very bad idea, but he had his own opinions about how things should work, and a lot of times WordPress wasn't going that way. But it never hurt the business because we're serving a different, you know, group of people with the theme. So anyway, that was how it got started. There were some more stories about how Scribe came to be, how Tony and I came up with ideas for software that we started building. But by that time, 2010 had rolled around, and we had a collection of companies that had been launched off CopyBlogger. We had CopyBlogger itself. We had Unglued Media, which owned Teaching Sales and another membership program. There was DIY Themes, which Chris and I owned. And then there were Scribe, which Sean Jackson and I owned. And, you know, things did not work out with Chris. We fundamentally had a difference of opinion on where Thesis should go. I think that became apparent in the ensuing years. You were front and center at a certain confrontation between he and Matt Mullenweg about GPL issues, which, again, I had tried to avoid. But long story short, that relationship ended. Studio Press.
It ended right around that interview.
Yeah.
Where they were battling it out publicly on Twitter. And I said, guys, come on together and let's talk about this. And they talked about it. And soon after, you seemed to separate yourself from DIY Themes. What happened? How do you break it off when you're 50-50 partners with someone who doesn't want to go in your direction?
Yeah, actually, Chris had a slightly larger percentage than me, which I thought was the way it ought to be. But it also meant that ultimately Chris would steer the ship. And for a long time, we agreed, or we agreed to agree, even when we disagreed. But development ideals started to diverge, and then the antagonism against WordPress and the GPL. Before your show, Matt and I were working out, how does Thesis come out in GPL? I knew it wouldn't matter. It just does not matter to this business model, because people are buying support more than they're buying a piece of software. So if you're stealing our software, great, have at it, but you're on your own. And again, we're serving the business community, not the technology community. That said, it just all came to a head, but it was not, oh, that happened, I must leave. It was, I can't do this anymore. The product's
going. Just walk away and you say, I give you my part of the business and I'll go and start something different? Or do you have, what did you do? What do you do? Because you didn't have a buy-sell agreement in place, right?
We did. It didn't ultimately go down that path. This is a lot of water under the bridge, you know, but there was some antagonism there. And ultimately, I did sell my share to Chris for a song, basically. But my thinking was, Brian Gardner and I had already decided that one way or another, either he and I would become partners and go in the direction that I thought was smarter with what he was doing with Genesis, or Studio Press would merge with all the other companies I owned interest in. And that's ultimately what happened. Copy Blogger Media was formed out of four different companies. So ultimately I just said, look, Chris, pay me this amount, which is basically like back revenue due to me. It wasn't a buyout per se. And I'm going to go do what I want to do. Because ultimately, I wasn't a happy person at the time. And I became a happy person, you know, shortly thereafter. You know, I told Gardner, I said, you know, you got a great thing with Studio Press. It's well respected. You're on the right path. In my opinion about how a framework should work, I will double sales in a year. And I was able to do that in 6 months. And now they're at a whole nother level from there. So ultimately, who cares about the money? I mean, we make lots of money. It's great. I have a great life. I can't complain. Did I technically leave a boatload of money on the table at that time? Yes. But things went in a different direction with DIY Themes and with us. And, you know, it's...
Let me separate your experience with DIY Themes from what I think our audience is going to take away from this conversation. There is something to the way that you partnered with other people who were good, who were good developers, good designers, and can do the things that you could do and brought to the table what you had, which is traffic and understanding of marketing and other things. If someone were to duplicate that and leave so much of the company's expertise in a partner's hands, do you have any advice for what they could do to avoid problems down the road?
It's a tough question because I have, four other partners who came the same way to me as Chris did. And don't get me wrong, Chris and I were great friends and great business partners for longer than a lot of people are. So you know, it's the only one that didn't work out. And so I certainly don't want to discourage people from it because it's been fantastic to me. It's brought, you know, as opposed to going the venture capital route where you basically hire all your talent, I partnered for all my talent, and that takes equity and you know, and all that. But the way things have worked out have left me never having to answer to an investor or board. And up to this point, that's been very important to me. And a lot of people have become millionaires because of that strategy. So you can't say that it doesn't work. It certainly does. Sometimes people change over the course of time and things don't work out and you have to work it out. I mean, Chris and I didn't sue each other. I think we're still cordial to one another. you know, so in my mind, if something's got to end, then it couldn't, you know, it could have been much worse. So
here's one thing I took away from it. You didn't partner up on CopyBlogger. You said CopyBlogger is the main source of traffic and it's my thing. I'll partner on the other thing. Partner on DIY themes. Then when you got together with Brian, was it the same thing or did you create CopyBlogger Media and then share a piece of that business? And the business would own both of your properties.
So when the four companies merged together, one of which was CopyBlogger LLC, which was a holding company for the website itself. Now that asset was, I've received multi-million dollar offers just for the website. As you can imagine, that's the platform, the nucleus. But it didn't generate revenue itself, really. It generated revenue from the satellite companies. So all of that came together into one company, and I did put CopyBlogger into, it's all owned by us now.
Yeah. Okay. So there was Brian's company. That's what created the design platform. What are the other companies that you partnered up with, and what do they do?
So Scribe was a separate entity. Sean Jackson was the architect, the software architect of that. And it started out as a very simple SEO copywriting algorithm that has evolved into really more sophisticated content marketing software over the years. Then there was the education arm as it existed back then, which brought in Teaching Cells and the other training program. Then once we all got together, we built all the other technology that we have, including the entire hosting line of business. We did have a separate piece of WordPress software called Premise, which we just took off the market for reasons that we can go into or not, depending on you.
I bought Premise, and I just went back to it the other day because it was so well designed. I really like your design sensibility. You understand what we need. You don't give us Loris Ipsum, for example. You give us text that's more like the kind of text that we would publish. So I went back in, I upgraded, and I noticed that it wasn't on the market anymore and that there wasn't even a blog post saying we're stopping to promote it. Right? What happened?
Oh, there were plenty of blog posts.
Were there?
There were several posts, several emails. I mean, we explained it, and yet there was a lot. You know, well, I can't say there was a lot of confusion, but there were people who were confused, even though, here's what I said. I said, we're just not going to sell it anymore. We are going to support it. We're going to continue to improve it. It is actually a centerpiece not only of our own marketing and sales strategy at CopyBlogger. I mean, that software is what delivers $300,000 worth of business a month at StudioPress, right? That is the digital sales mechanism.
Forgive me, that what Premise is, and actually it still is, it's software and education bundle that lets you quickly and effectively create landing pages with WordPress. Many landing pages that I've created, that others have created, are built on Premise, which plugs into WordPress. And you guys use it too. So then why did you stop marketing it?
So it's landing page software, but it's also membership site software. Right. And so, but it's, you know, if you sell something digital like themes, you can use it as that kind of gateway because it's a protected backend. Our My CopyBlogger concept is a whole bunch of free content, but it's gated. So you register for it and then you have access and all that kind of thing. Anyway, so this is like our core technology that powers not only our own sites, but the platform that's being released this year, the complete solution, as opposed to here's this piece and here's this piece and here's hosting and here's some content marketing software. It's all one thing, which we've, by listening, have heard that's where the next frontier is. You know, it's not necessarily about WordPress anymore. It's about just give me something that works, and I don't have to worry about, you know, plugins that have security leaks and I don't hear about it, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so we basically just said, look, we're not going to sell this a la carte anymore. We gave everyone one more week to buy it if they wanted it, and we took it off the market. So if you missed that, that's what you missed. It's not anyone who, there's like 13,000 people that own Premise, and we're taking very good care of them. We just decided that we're killing ourselves selling it at even $165, you know.
Even $165 is not enough money to make it worth
given the ROI. So, you know, we became our own case study with My Copy Blogger and boosted our email opt-in rates by 400%. I mean, that's serious economic value. The landing page component is fairly powerful, you know, and you've got people like Unbounce who have that on a recurring model and are killing it, right? You know, so I think we were generous with Premise. And you know, who knows if we'll go a la carte with those kind of features in the future. But the point being that it's very powerful as a part of an overall solution. And that's what we've been working towards for the last 3 years. We've never sat still. We always, everything that we've built though has been a part of this thing. And I'm not sure if that was clear to people or not.
I didn't know it.
Yeah.
But you did have this vision from the beginning. We're going to create a hosted solution that does everything you need. You're not going to have to learn how to install and futz around with WordPress and the plugins that go along with it. Is that right?
That's when we got together in Denver in 2010, all the current partners of Copyblogger Media had never been in a room together before. That's kind of amazing. In less than, I think it was 2 to 3 hours, we'd hammered out a merger agreement because everyone was so fired up about the vision for what we wanted to build, and that was it. So,
how did you know that those are the right tools to include, Scribe, for example, and that those are the right people, Sean and Brian, were the right people to partner up with?
Well, it's interesting. Sean went through the ringer because he basically stalked me at a conference just to be able to present to me. And he basically built a piece of, you know, beta initial software that was built on my philosophies of people first when it comes to SEO. And I was like, well, that's cool. And then I started looking at how it worked, and we worked out some of the initial kinks. We launched, and we just continued to improve it relentlessly. It went through 4 iterations in a very short period of time. And, you know, as Google has changed, as Panda happened, as Penguin happened, and now Hummingbird, it's become more and more in tune with how, you know, SEO actually works, but it's also perfectly in tune. The same process goes into how do you succeed in social media? How do you succeed in direct content marketing, which is really the goal? So so Sean went through several months of me evaluating what he had built and, more importantly, him as a person. Steve Jobs had this amazing quote that I found to be true, which is, people only see what you say yes to, but they don't see what you say no to. And I've said yes to, what, 5 things? And I've said no to 95 or more. So many opportunities come to you if you have an audience. That's awesome. Knowing not to take the short-term buck or the wrong product or the partner who feels wrong in your gut, that is harder. But if you put the people you're serving ahead of your own wallet, in the long run, your wallet's just fine.
Talk to me, since my sponsor is Walker Corporate Law and you have a legal background, What protections can we put in place if we are to do what you're doing? If we're to say, I'm going to partner with new people. I know we kind of talked about it before, but here you are really bringing a business that's massively successful, that has incredible reputation, and partnering up with Sean, who's not as far advanced as you are. And Brian, actually, who's very far advanced and had a huge reputation online and obviously inspired many other people. What would we do to protect ourselves?
Well, yeah, that's where the background as an attorney has served me well. In two senses. One is making sure you have the right paperwork, you know, good contracts, like good fences, make for good neighbors, all that kind of good thing. The other aspect of it, though, is that having the background in law makes me less uptight about legal issues, because ultimately I found that if you have the right partner, you're going to figure it out, you're going to work it out. Even if things kind of go sideways, you'll ultimately figure out how to resolve it and move on. But every one of these partnerships was its own company with its own LLC agreement, which is a binding legal document that, you know, talks about how the owners of the company are going to deal with one another in various situations. So when you say before, was there a buy-sell? Yes, of course there was.
Buy-sell, is there anything else that we might need to go to our lawyer and say, help me prepare by having a good fence, I have a good neighbor, I need a buy-sell agreement with my potential partner. Is there anything else that we should say we'd like to have in our agreement?
Well, there's two ways to go if you're doing at the level I was doing, which is literally forming satellite companies around the CopyBlogger mothership, if you will.
They were satellite companies? I thought you did merge them all into one and split the pieces among the founders of this new business.
In 2010, before that, yes. They were all separate.
I see, right. So yeah. In 2010, what else did you do? You had buy-sell agreements so that if you needed to say to Sean Jackson, hey, this isn't working out, or he needed to say to you there was a way to separate. What else do you do?
Well, that's what we had coming into the merger, and then we just merged it into one big, sophisticated document. That's the thing, though. That was a much bigger company, and yet essentially the terms that go into an agreement like that are similar, even in a more simple document between two people instead of five. So a good attorney, such as your sponsor, will know. I mean, this is not reinventing the wheel in most cases. Now, the place where a skilled attorney comes in most handy is when you have the weird situation, such as licensing issues, like one person has technology and you're not just throwing it all together and saying, let's go 50-50. Mm. You know, at that point you have non-standard drafting and you need to take that into account. But for the most part, a good LLC agreement or a good joint venture agreement, which is a contractual form of partnership as opposed to the entity form. Okay. I'm getting too lawyerly for you, but but essentially they do the same thing. They say, you know, this is how we're going to divide things up, profits, losses, and if things go badly in these 15 different ways, here's how we handle it.
Okay. The other thing that we talked about before we started is you are essentially on your own. And here you suddenly today have, I forget, I asked my researcher to find out how many people we could hunt down on LinkedIn who had CopyBlogger as current job. I think it was 35. How do you go from just running your own show to suddenly being a manager? Do you remember the first time you had someone else at the company?
So it's interesting. So the accumulation of partners that I went through, you know, from 2007 till the merger in 2010 was my executive team. In essence, right? So when we merged together, each company had its own employees to some degree. At mm-hmm. the time, Studio Press brought over the most people. Scribe had a couple people. And then I think other than that, that was it. And so then we formed with that nucleus and then just started adding headcount, not to grow for growing sake, obviously. For example, when we added hosting, that was an entire team of people that suddenly became part of the company because that's what was necessary to do. So Tony, again, he's operations and he is a consummate process guy. my startups before I started Copyblogger, I was horrible at delegating. I ran everything. The business could not run, do anything without me. And guess what? I was overworked and miserable. Tony was like, hey, we don't want to do that again. And, you know, started from the beginning because we're a very support intensive organization as well. So that's a big part of what he oversees. And then, you know, with the development team, it all runs by Scrum, all these processes that just make things work, which allows me to still focus on, okay, what's the long-term strategy? And editorial, you know, I have Sonia, who is basically our chief content officer, extremely talented writer and content creator. But it all still kind of works according to the grand plan of how things work. Then at the nitty-gritty level, I still write all the copy for every site. Every time we do a launch, I write it all. Which I think sounds kind of weird. But then again, going back to 37 Signals, I read that Jason Fried still does the exact same thing. And when it comes down to it, to really owning the buck stops here with me, I'm the one that ought to be writing those words, you know? And so far, that continues to be the case.
So if I wanted to understand why Copyblogger as an organization is run so well, I would need to talk to Tony, right?
That's a good place to start. Editorial runs kind of Tony's theory is that writers are unmanageable, and he's probably right. So editorial runs in its own weird way with my oversight, but also Robert Bruce, Jared Morris is our new director of content. Sonia is very much a practitioner rather than a manager in a lot of ways. So that's the creative part of the company that doesn't run according to anyone else's rules. Then development and support are very tight. So you would talk to Tony about those things. And then you'd get me to try to explain, you know, how the poet and the pink-haired hippie from Berkeley run the content creation side.
So I don't want to walk away from this conversation feeling like it's magic, like you just happen to have the right group of people. I want to walk away from it, if I can, Brian, with an understanding that I could take back and make my life and my business life, actually, more organized like yours. What's the one thing that if you could send me, and of course the audience more importantly, away from this conversation, what's the one thing that we can send them away with to give them this Zen-like management that you have?
Well, it all kind of boils down to an intersection of your passion and what you can tie that to serve the needs of others. And I think where a lot of people go wrong at a very initial stage is that, you know, we love to believe, again, going back to Jobs, that he just made the iPad because he wanted to, and he knew something magical. No, he was feeding an existing desire in a new way. That's how human beings work, okay? So if you love the story of the person who follows their own way and creates something that everyone loves, in essence, that person got lucky, okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. On the other side of things, you can figure out what people want, tie that together with what you are truly passionate with, because if you're not passionate about it, do you really think for the long term you're going to choose to do the right thing and continue to show up and outdo yourself? I don't think so. But yeah, so basically from a foundational level, we listen very carefully to the desires and problems that people have, not what people tell you they want. Those are two very distinct things. People don't know what they want necessarily, but they do have problems and desires. From there, it's just, how do we do this without becoming miserable in the process? How do you satisfy people and hopefully turn them into fans and advocates without making yourself miserable like I was with my previous businesses? You know, I had people who loved what we did back then when I had the virtual real estate brokerages, but I was miserable. That is not fun.
Why were you miserable?
Because I didn't know how to create processes. I didn't know how to delegate. I didn't know how to let others do what they're good at to leave me doing what I'm good at. So if you really want to look at the genesis of it, it was me coming in and saying, I'm never doing that again. So the first partner was Tony, then came Sonia, then came Sean, then came Gardner. Each one a unique set of skills that translated when you bubble. We're pretty flat as an organization, but still, everyone has their own area of expertise that makes this organization run really well.
So and, I can see that.
Well, if we see a problem, we fix it immediately. We don't stick our head in the ground and say, oh, you know, that'll go away.
You also said processes. You said good people who you can delegate to and trust. What kind of processes? You also said that.
Well, so for example, Tony was a software developer before we met, and they actually built nuclear reactor software, mission critical stuff. Okay. So it was very important to make sure that things were done correctly, along with all the other client management things that had to go on with that. So he is very, you know, this was a person back in 2006 who watched the way I developed content on CopyBlogger and said, you're doing agile content development. You're doing lean. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. It just seems like a smart thing to do, which is put something out there, see what happens, and adapt, essentially. Now, you know, we were essentially the consummate lean startup because of Tony, and he knew all of that stuff, dating back to Toyota's manufacturing processes and all that. Then later, Eric Ries comes out with his great book, and it's a movement now. And I think that's great because we've seen firsthand that that works. That's essentially put it out there, listen, adapt, iterate, improve, keep going, do it again, right? So if you may want to look at it at that point. Some of our people in the organization, Sean in particular, came from a very corporate background. And our philosophy and approach drove him insane for a while. Because we'll turn on a dime like that, and we can pull it off because...
What did you turn on a dime for? What's one thing where you thought, aha, we understand what people want, and then you said, ooh, no, we got to take a left turn here?
We've never made a major mistake because I spend way too much time researching, thinking, observing before we make a big decision. But once you implement, there's a thousand decisions that you can make one way or another. You're not going to be right even maybe half the time. You're really great if you're right half the time. But you can change if you're ready for it. The worst thing you can do, I think this has been true for a long time, but in this environment, real time, if you are stuck to a particular idea of how it should be, as opposed to wanting to get it how it is or needs to be, then there's a good chance you're going to fail. Like I said, some people get incredibly lucky. And it's unfortunate, I think, that those are the stories that make it out there the most because they're an anomaly. And then they give people the wrong idea and then they fail. And hopefully they learn and then they do it right the next time. Some people never learn. And that is sad to see.
I asked you at the beginning how you knew what products to create, and you said you have to understand what people need, and you said you are your customer, and you knew what you needed in the beginning, and that's how you understood what to create. Does it always start still with what you need, or can you walk me through, how about hosting? Can you walk me through hosting? How did you know that there was a need for it, and then how did you develop a clear understanding of it, and what did you launch? Maybe there we can see the lean startup methodology unfold in the way that you work.
Right. So that is a great question. So I knew there was a problem with hosting because we were a high traffic, especially high burst of traffic publisher. That's essentially what you're trying to accomplish with content marketing. Publishing something so great that your traffic goes up, your audience goes up in the long term. So it was always trouble, even though because we would say, okay, you know, take care of us for hosting, take care of us well, and we'll put a little ad in the sidebar or whatever. Ultimately, it was never satisfying to me. We ended up hooking up with a group of guys, Derek Schaefer and Jared Morris, who originally came to us through the hosting side. is now our director of content. And this is why. He was a publisher. He published a sports site that was hooked up with Fox Sports Net and all these high traffic sources. He was in Google News. So these guys had a site that got, you know, as much or more traffic than Copyblogger, and they had the same hosting issues. Unfortunately, they were all, I mean, fortunately, unlike me, they were all Linux geeks, and they're like, we're going to fix this. We're going to do our own, we're going to roll our own. So they did that for themselves. They started taking on a few clients. Derek was a friend of Sean's who lived in Dallas. All that group lived in Dallas. I met them, and the first thing was, hey, you should let me host you. That was how the discussion started. And I said, okay, let's give it a shot. Best hosting I'd ever had. Next conversation. You know, we should sell this to other people. And in the back of my mind, that first conversation didn't include the fact that we were going towards a hosted platform. That was what we were building. We knew we needed hosting, and we knew it had to be exceptional. It's funny. General WordPress hosting is harder than a controlled hosting environment that we're about to release, because you can't control for this theme and that plugin. And that's where all the problems are. And that's why I think you've seen the emergence of this specialty WordPress-only hosting with WP Engine, Pagely, several others, including Synthesis, that are filling this need. And I don't feel like we should be competing against each other. We're competing against GoDaddy and all these people putting thousands of people on a box and calling it WordPress hosting.
And so you knew that you had this problem.
That's the need. Again, anyone who has any more than zero traffic, you know this, you know. You need good hosting. And even though I was getting what was billed as a red carpet service, it just wasn't good enough. And it really comes down to, if you really want to know what it narrows down to, is that WordPress is its own beast. The way it handles calls and databases and all that means you can't just install it on a basic server and have it work really well. And that's why you have this managed WordPress hosting industry now. So that's probably the best example of something that was mission critical that we needed, that I was unsatisfied with, and that we were able to solve because the people who created the technology for Synthesis were also publishers themselves. I don't know anyone else, and this has kind of been our story with Synthesis, which is I don't know anyone else who started as an actual high traffic publisher and went into the hosting business. It's usually just a technology thing. So
yes. Even WP Engine I saw evolved a lot, where I think they started out thinking about bloggers, and then they moved on to realize that there are people who are way bigger than bloggers, willing to pay much more than the $25 to $50 a month that a blogger would pay. And that's their evolution, that they discovered, I think, more revenue in more mission-critical sites. Mission-critical sites. And sites for big enterprise customers who have all kinds of issues out of time.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we host Realtor.com, CFO.com. The enterprise customers are the ones that, you know, we don't have an outbound sales team whatsoever or any sort of enterprise sales, but they do find us. And of course, people like WP Engine, people like Automatics, VIP Hosting. You know, think about it. The New York Times runs on WordPress. It's just a custom version of WordPress with a lot of bandwidth and hosting requirements. So the need is out there. Anyway, we found our part in that. The interesting thing to me is that Synthesis is our fastest growing line of business. It's well into the seven figures. And we really did it to release the thing that we're releasing this year. So I really don't feel like we're in competition with anyone else in that regard. Because we're trying to be a total solution provider.
I want to ask you about what you're releasing. One more thing about where you were. I asked my team, I said, how much is Copyblogger generating? We couldn't come up with anything for 2012 or 2013. We have 2011, about $5 million in revenue. 2012, all we have is estimates, and 2013 estimates, like roughly $10 to $13 million. But those are just estimates based on what we were able to research. Can you announce here what your revenues were for 2013?
Ah, I like your numbers better. we're heading in that direction. But let's see. 2012 was 5.8. And last year was, I don't have final numbers for last year, but it's seven something.
Did we get the 2011 revenue right? Roughly 5 million?
I think it was more like three something. That was the first full year after we merged.
Okay. That stuff, even if we get it wrong, it's helpful so we can go back and figure out what did we get wrong? Where did we trust in that next time? So you are launching something this year. What is it? What is this big process, this big holistic software?
Well, I think the easiest way to get people to understand what it is to compare it to something that's already out there that we don't necessarily see as a competing offer for a couple of reasons, but obviously HubSpot, right?
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, so HubSpot has taken an enormous amount of venture capital and built a platform that they've been selling over time now for quite a while. And we're the different route in that we're bootstrapped. We never took money. We built a platform for ourselves. We demonstrated, you know, for our market that it works. Obviously, we are a true inbound marketing company in every sense of the word, and we've used our own tools. And so we feel like we, again, are our own best case study in that case, because I don't think the average small to medium business is going to take $70 million in venture capital, you know. So I think we're serving probably a different market than HubSpot to a certain degree. But at the same time, with Synthesis, we're seeing, you know, a lot of enterprise demand already, and those people are interested in, you know, can we have what you use exactly for Copyblogger? So the platform, which is called Rainmaker, we're building a new site that will be launched very soon on the platform itself. It'll be content driven, all that kind of good stuff. So it's, again, a demonstration of what the platform does while we teach people how to use it.
So it'll be based on WordPress. It'll include content generating tools, it seems like, include SEO, include everything. What else?
So, you know, WordPress is the core, and that's another, I think, very fundamental difference between something like HubSpot, which is 100% proprietary. We recognize, again, the New York Times runs on WordPress, but it is a very tricked out version of WordPress. We run on WordPress, but it is a tricked out version of WordPress. We're selling the tricked out version. But I wouldn't have used HubSpot back then or at all, mainly because I believe in a open source core. I don't think any company can match the creativity and output of thousands of people in the WordPress community at the core level. That said, you know, we are providing a complete hosted solution with our framework, with our design templates built in a very elegant theme switching, analytics, research, content optimization, outreach, everything you need to actually do the job is built in. And again, email is something that we're going to provide an option for. We are not going to force people, at least initially, to use our email. If you want to use AWeber or you want to use MailChimp or you want to use Constant Contact, that's fine with us. Because we've used different email providers over the years. But we do have our own email now. You're actually dragging more out of me than I'm ready to give, Andrew.
I was wondering that. One missing piece of the puzzle. Are you offering it to users yet? Is it beta?
Not yet. No. So beta on the platform itself starts sometime this month, assuming this is published in January. And
I think publishes in February. Actually, I think we've got enough of a backlog that that's probably what we're going to do, unless you'd rather we rush it.
No, it's up to you. It's your show.
Okay. So you will have email, but it won't be a required part of the business. How would you think? How would you rethink email? I feel like a lot of the email providers out there are still creating software that could have existed 10 years ago.
Yeah. So, you know, it won't be in V1, but we will also end up being the first marketing automation platform for WordPress, which is the stuff that's hard and is not out there in any form yet. So you can see that we're starting with the pieces and putting them together and then evolving with the platform over time. But to a certain degree, that's a great question because, you know, people overthink email too much. You know why email is hard and you know why email works. It comes down to the value of your content and the skill of your copy. And so many people are just not even focusing on the fundamentals. And again, that was what copy bloggers started as, right? We're talking about create great words that are influential, persuasive, engaging, all of this good stuff, because that is fundamental. You can have the greatest technology in the world, all the automation, all the bells and whistles. If people don't want what your words in any medium, text, video, audio, what they're conveying, you're wasting your time. It really comes down to that. So Tim Ferriss asked me by email a question about email. And he had obviously did a lot of initial research and he was talking about this platform for that and automation and everything. And I'm like, the answer is start with great content and great copy. And Tim's a great copywriter. I don't know if a lot of people know that. We went from 0 to 7 million with just that. People are amazed at the lack of sophistication in our email offering other than basic, you know, suppression to make sure this list doesn't get that, this message or duplicates or anything like that. So you can make a lot of money with just plain old-fashioned words. And I think I need to keep reminding people of that.
So if we were to use plain old-fashioned words as a headline for this interview, the copywriter, what would you suggest the headline be?
Wow, you're putting me on the spot.
Totally, aren't I?
Let's see. Why serving others is the secret to success. I don't know if that's the best headline, but that is a headline.
Okay. Some reasons why serving others is the secret to success.
Yeah, it's so funny. We once again are getting the backlash against the list.
No, I just want to include the revenue number at the top.
Yeah, right. yeah, no, it's funny what the BuzzFeeds and Upworthies of the world have done with the conversation. I love to point people to all the very scholarly defenses of the list format. It's just something our brain really likes. What it comes down to is a good number in the headline thing will always work, but you better damn well back it up with the content. And that's really what people are complaining about, right? They don't feel
it's
bad that
the
they...
headline, it's that when you get there...
Yeah, they don't feel bad that they clicked on the headline. They feel bad when they get there.
All right. Also, to close this out, I've got you here. You've seen the site, Mixergy. Do you have any advice for how we can improve it?
Are you doing any current A/B testing, heat maps, any of that kind of stuff?
No, we should be doing that on the posts themselves.
Within the structure of a site, obviously you have your homepage. That used to be the most important page. It's probably still I don't know what your analytics say, but it's still our highest traffic page because they'll come in somewhere and then they click over to see, you know, what the homepage says. Landing pages that are gateway points from search and or social, all of that stuff is what you optimize toward whatever your goal is, whether it's selling premium content. There's a very different approach to what you do when you are selling page views versus what you do when you're selling products or services, right? And that's the encouraging thing for people who use content for marketing, which is you don't need to be TechCrunch or BuzzFeed to make a good living. because you're not selling very, very inexpensive banner ads. What I would say to you is that you need to start testing your actions, right? What are you trying to get people to accomplish, and what's the pathway, the persuasion architecture of your site that kind of makes them go in that direction? Those are the things you test and you optimize.
What is it for you? I mean, if I look at Copy Blogger, I loved when you guys changed the homepage from just a list of the past posts to something that explains what the whole business is. But if I look at one of the blog posts, what are you driving people to from that post?
Generally, it's all to my Copy Blogger, which is the kind of registered gated content concept. So over the years, we've created a ton of content. So we basically took a lot of the best cornerstone topics that we had, updated it all, packaged it in very nice ebooks, and put it all in this content library. It's still free, but you have to register. And that's the mechanism by which our email opt-in rate went up 400%. To give you an example, it took us 3 years to build an email newsletter list of around 100,000 people. Since May of 2013, we're at about 88. So you can see the acceleration of taking traffic and converting it into something where people actually want to follow you over time. And
I mean, 88,000 people are here. Actually, I see 85,831 smart online marketers are a part of my.copyblogger.com.
Right.
And that's what you're saying, that before, much of the content that's in there, like how to write a magnetic headline, that was available just on Copy Blogger, and you can cruise it be a part of the site. Today, that is on my Copy Blogger, and I do have to register. And when I do register, I get all this other stuff with it.
Right. And then, of course, there's some other interesting stuff here that we do because my Copy Blogger and Authority, the paid part of the site, are integrated in that back end in a way that's very good at giving people a glimpse of what that's all about without any kind of hard sell, you know. So there was a lot of thought that
Authority
went into this.
The educational product.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. I see. And actually, if I look at the site right now, I do see a post right there in the heart of the site. To the right, I see the email box where I can join the mailing list directly. Underneath that, I see register today to get, and that's the my.copyblogger. Underneath the post, I see another place to register. Those are all obvious. Is there anything non-obvious that I'm missing?
Yeah.
To grow your list from these posts?
So a big part of our strategy over time was, okay, so when I started Copy Blogger in 2006, I started writing it almost like a book in that I would write post or articles in series along a certain theme. So the first thing I did was write 10 articles. I wrote a couple of other posts in the mix to keep myself from going crazy, but 10 posts on copywriting called Copywriting 101. I aggregated all those posts on a landing page, what I call a content landing page. For all our other main topics, content marketing, SEO copywriting, keyword research, landing pages, internet marketing, we basically did the same thing with these content landing pages. So up until last May, those were like tables of content with links to post. And by aggregating the content that way, those resource pages attracted tons of links, tons of sharing. And if you want to log out of Google personalized search and see how each one of them ranks, they all do very well. So what's not obvious is that each of those landing pages, which are the topics of the ebooks, are taking search traffic, and instead of it being, you know, a bounce or transient traffic, it's basically driving them into our email system as well.
I see. All right, I get that. And you're right, I hadn't noticed that, even though I was checking out those pages throughout the day. All right, I've taken up a lot of your time here today, and I appreciate you coming here and doing an interview. I always ask the guests before, how do I make this a win for them? We're here. Do you feel like this was a win for you now that we've gone through the whole interview?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think You ask some good questions, and those type of questions are the type I think that any entrepreneur or business owner has to revisit. And if you don't have someone with an outside perspective doing the questioning, often you succumb to the old cliched boxed in thinking. Being able to stand up and explain, number one, but also rationally justify what you do, especially when you're in the business of selling what you do to others. You know, I mean, doesn't it really boil down to that? For me, that's worth the money right there.
Well, thank you. Thank you for doing this interview. And just to be clear, he is not paying for this interview. We do not take payment for interviews.
That was a poor choice of words. I'm very glad that you invited me to be on the show.
There are a few people who somehow think that they could buy their way out of an interview, which is weird.
No, but I've been a fan of the show for a long time, and I'm just glad I got to come on and talk with you, Andrew.
It's an honor to have you on here. The website is copyblogger.com. And we're going to see a whole lot more coming from Brian and his team. Thank you for doing this interview. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.